41. Scars. This act of great villainy went beyond the impudence which had hitherto been ascribed to the orders. As the fighting was particularly intense at this time, many attributed this act to a sense of inherent betrayal, and after they withdrew, about 2,000 made assault upon them, destroying much of the membership. But this was only 9 of the 10, as one said they would not abandon their arms and flee, but instead entertained great subterfuge at the expense of the other 9. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 38, page 20. Kaladin rested his fingers on the chasm wall as Bridge 17 formed up behind him. He remembered being frightened of these chasms when he first descended into them. He had feared that heavy rains would cause a flash flood while his men were scavenging. He was a little surprised Gaz hadn't found a way to accidentally get Bridge 4 assigned to chasm duty on the day of a high storm. Bridge 4 had embraced its punishment, claiming these pits. Kaladin was startled to realize that coming down here felt more like coming home than returning to Hearthstone and his parents would have. The chasms were his.
"The lads are ready, sir," Teft said, stepping up beside him.
"Where were you the other night?" Kaladin asked, looking up toward the crack of open sky above.
"I was off duty, sir," Teft said. "Went to see what I could find in the market. Do I need to report every little thing I do?"
"He went to the market," Kaladin said. "In a high storm?"
"Time may have gotten away from me for a breath or two," Teft said, looking away.
Kaladin wanted to press further, but Teft was entitled to his privacy. "They're not bridgemen anymore. They don't have to spend all of their time together. They'll start having lives again." He wanted to encourage that. Still, it was disturbing. If he didn't know where they all were, how could he make sure they were all safe? He turned around to regard Bridge 17, a motley crew. Some had been slaves, purchased for the bridges. Others had been criminals, though the crimes punishable by bridge duty in Sadeus's army could be practically anything. Falling into debt, insulting an officer, fighting. "You," Kaladin said to the men, "are Bridge 17, under the command of Sergeant Pitt. You are not soldiers. You may wear the uniforms, but they don't fit you yet. You're playing dress-up. We're going to change that." The men shuffled and looked about. Though Teft had been working with them and the other crews for weeks now, these didn't yet see themselves as soldiers. As long as that was true, they'd hold those spears at awkward angles, look around lazily when being addressed, and shuffle in line. "The chasms are mine," Kaladin said. "I give you leave to practice here."
"Sergeant Pitt?"
"Yes, sir,"
Pitt said, standing at attention.
"This is a sloppy mess of storm leavings you've got to work with, but I've seen worse."
"I find that hard to believe, sir."
"Believe it," Kaladin said, looking over the men. "I was in Bridge 4. Lieutenant Teft, they're yours. Make them sweat."
"Aye, sir," Teft said.
He began to call out orders as Kaladin picked up his spear and made his way farther down the chasms. It would be slow going, getting all 20 crews into shape, but at least Teft had successfully trained the sergeants. Heralds send that the same training worked on the common men. Kaladin wished he could explain, even to himself, why he felt so anxious about getting these men ready. He felt he was racing towards something, though what he didn't know. That writing on the wall. Storms had had him on edge. 37 days. He passed Syl, sitting on the frond of a frill bloom growing from the wall. It pulled close at Kaladin's approach. She didn't notice, but remained sitting in the air.
"What is it that you want, Kaladin?" she asked.
"To keep my men alive," he said immediately.
"No," Syl said. "That was what you wanted."
"You're saying I don't want them to be safe?"
She slid down onto his shoulder, moving like a stiff breeze had blown her. She crossed her legs, sitting ladylike, skirt rippling as he walked.
"In Bridge 4, you dedicated everything you had to saving them," Syl said. Well, they're saved. You can't go about protecting everyone like a... like a...
Father Curl watches over his eggs?
Exactly.
She paused.
What's a curl?
A crustacean, Kaladin said. About the size of a small axe hound. Looks kind of like a cross between a crab and a tortoise.
Ooh, Syl said. I want to see one.
They don't live out here. Kaladin walked with his eyes forward, so she poked him in the neck until he looked at her. Then she rolled her eyes exaggeratedly.
So you admit that your men are relatively safe, she said. That means you haven't really answered my question. What do you want?
He passed piles of bones and wood, overgrown with moss. On one pile, Rotspren and Lifespren spun about one another, little motes of red and green glowing around the vines that sprouted incongruously from the mass of death.
I want to beat that assassin, Kaladin said,
surprised by how vehemently he felt it.
Why?
Because it's my job to protect Dalinar. Syl shook her head.
That's not it.
What? You think you've gotten good at reading human intentions?
Not all humans. Just you.
Kaladin grunted, stepping carefully around the edge of a dark pool. He'd rather not spend the rest of the day with soaked boots. These new ones didn't hold out the water as well as they should.
Maybe, he said, I want to beat that assassin because this is all his fault. If he hadn't killed Gavilar, Tien wouldn't have been drafted, and I wouldn't have followed him. Tien wouldn't have died.
And you don't think Rishon would have found another way of getting back at your father?
Rishon was the city lord of Kaladin's hometown back in Alethkar. Sending Tien into the army had been an act of petty vengeance on his part, a way to get back at Kaladin's father for not being a good enough surgeon to save Rishon's son.
He probably would have done something else, Kaladin admitted. Still, that assassin deserves to die.
He heard the others before he reached them, their voices echoing down the cavernous chasm bottom.
What I'm trying to explain, one said, is that nobody seems to be asking the right questions.
Sigzil's voice, with his elevated Aesish accent.
We call the Parshendi savages, and everyone says they hadn't ever met people until that day they encountered the Alethi expedition. If those things are true, then what storm brought them a Shin assassin? A Shin assassin who can surge-bind, no less.
Kaladin stepped into the light of their spheres, sprinkled about on the floor of the chasm, which had been cleared of debris since the last time Kaladin had been here. Sigzil, Rock, and Lopin sat on boulders waiting for him.
Are you implying that the assassin in white never really worked for the Parshendi? Kaladin asked. Or are you implying that the Parshendi lied about being as isolated as they claimed?
I'm not implying anything, Sigzil said, turning toward Kaladin. My master trained me to ask questions, so I'm asking them. Something doesn't make sense about this whole matter. The Shin are extremely xenophobic. They rarely leave their lands, and you never find them working as mercenaries. Now this one goes about assassinating kings? With a shard blade? Is he still working for the Parshendi? If so, why did they wait so long to unleash him against us again?
Does it matter who he's working for? Kaladin asked, sucking in stormlight.
Of course it does, Sigzil said.
Why?
Because it's a question, he said, as if offended. Besides, discovering his true employer might give us a clue to their goal, and knowing that might help us defeat him.
Kaladin smiled, then tried to run up the wall. After falling to the ground, ending up flat on his back, he sighed. Rock's head leaned in over him.
It's fun to watch, he said. But this thing, you are certain she can work?
The assassin walked on the ceiling, Kaladin said. Are you sure he wasn't just doing what we did? Sigzil asked skeptically. Using the stormlight to stick one object to another? He could have sprayed the ceiling with stormlight, then jumped up into it to stick there.
No, Kaladin said, stormlight escaping his lips. He jumped up and landed on the ceiling. Then he ran down the wall and sent Adolin to the ceiling somehow. The prince didn't stick there. He fell that way.
Kaladin watched his stormlight rise and evaporate. At the end of it all, the assassin, he flew away.
Ha!
Lopin said from his rock perch.
Oh, I knew it. When we have this figured out, the king of all Herdaz, he will say to me, Lopin, you are glowing and this is impressive, but you can also fly. For this, you may marry my daughter.
The king of Herdaz doesn't have a daughter, Sigzil said.
He doesn't? I have been lied to all this time.
You don't know your royal family? Kaladin asked, sitting up.
Gone? I haven't been to Herdaz since I was a baby. There are as many Herdazians in Alethkar and Yuccaved these days as there are in our homeland. Flick my sparks, I'm practically an Alethi, only not so tall and not so grouchy.
Rock gave Kaladin a hand and pulled him to his feet. Syl had taken a perch on the wall.
Do you know how this works? Kaladin asked her. She shook her head.
But the assassin is a Windrunner, Kaladin said.
I think, Syl said, something like you. Maybe,
she shrugged. Sigzil followed the direction that Kaladin was looking.
I wish I could see it, he mumbled. It would be a...
Gah!
He jumped backward, pointing.
It looks like a little person.
Kaladin raised an eyebrow toward Syl.
I like him, she said. Also, Sigzil, I'm a she and not an it, thank you very much.
Spren have genders?
Sigzil asked, amazed.
Of course, she said. Though technically, it probably has something to do with the way people view us. Personification of the forces of nature or some similar gobbledy-blarthy.
Doesn't that bother you? Kaladin asked. That you might be a creation of human perception?
You're a creation of your parents. Who cares how we were born? I can think. That's good enough.
She grinned in a mischievous way, then zipped down as a ribbon of light toward Sigzil, who had settled down on a rock with a stunned expression. She stopped right in front of him, returned to the form of a young woman, then leaned in and made her face look exactly like his.
Gah!
Sigzil cried again, scrambling away, making her giggle and change her face back. Sigzil looked toward Kaladin.
She talks like a real person.
He raised a hand to his head.
The stories say the Night Watcher might be capable of that. Powerful Spren. Vast Spren.
Is he calling me vast?
Syl said, cocking her head to the side.
Not sure what I think of that.
Sigzil, Kaladin said. Could the Windrunners fly? The men gingerly sat back down, still staring at Syl.
Stories and lore aren't my specialty, he said. I tell of different places, to make the world smaller and to help men understand each other. I've heard legends speak of people dancing on the clouds, but who is to say what is fancy and what is truth from stories so old?
We've got to figure this out, Kaladin said. The assassin will return.
So, Rock said, jump at the wall some more. I will not laugh much.
He settled down on a boulder and plucked a small crab off the ground beside him. He inspected it, then popped it into his mouth and began chewing.
Ew,
Sigzil said.
Tastes good,
Rock said, speaking with his mouth full.
But better with salt and oil.
Kaladin regarded the wall, then closed his eyes and drew in more stormlight. He felt it inside of him, beating against the walls of his veins and arteries, trying to escape, daring him forward, to jump, to move, to do.
So, Sigzil said to the others, are we assuming that the assassin in white was the one who sabotaged the king's railing?
Bah,
Rock said.
Why would he do this thing? He could kill more easily.
Yeah, Lopin agreed. Maybe the railing was done by one of the other high princes.
Kaladin opened his eyes and looked at his arm, palm against the slick wall of the chasm, elbow straight. Stormlight rose from his skin, curling wisps of light that vaporized in the air. Rock nodded.
All high princes want the king dead, though they will not speak of this. One of them sent saboteur.
So how did this saboteur get to the balcony? Sigzil asked. It must have taken some time to cut through the railing. It was metal. Unless... How smooth was that cut, Kaladin?
Kaladin narrowed his eyes, watching that stormlight rise. It was raw power. No. Power was the wrong term. It was a force, like the surges that ruled the universe. They made fire burn, made rocks fall, made light glow. These wisps, they were the surges reduced to some primal form. He could use it. Use it to...
Cal?
Sigzel's voice asked, though it seemed distant, like an unimportant buzzing.
How smooth was the cut to the railing? Could it have been a shard blade?
The voice faded. For a moment, Kaladin thought he saw shadows of a world that was not. Shadows of another place. And in that place, a distant sky with a sun enclosed, almost as if by a corridor of clouds. There. He made the direction of the wall become down. Suddenly, his arm was all that was supporting him. He fell forward into the wall, grunting. His awareness of his surroundings returned in a crash, only his perspective was bizarre. He scrambled to his feet and found himself standing on the wall. He backed up a few paces, walking up the side of the chasm. To him, that wall was the floor, and the other three bridgemen stood on the actual floor, which looked like the wall. This, Kaladin thought, is going to get confusing.
Wow, Lopin said, standing up excitedly. Yeah, this is really going to be fun. Run up the wall, Goncho.
Kaladin hesitated, then turned and started running. It was like he was in a cave. The two walls of the chasm, the top and bottom. Those slowly squeezed together as he moved toward the sky. Feeling the rush of the stormlight within him, Kaladin grinned. Syl streaked along beside him, laughing. The closer they got to the top, the narrower the chasm became. Kaladin slowed, then stopped. Syl streaked out in front of him, zipping out of the chasm as if leaping from the mouth of the cave. She turned about, a ribbon of light.
Come on, she called to him. Out onto the plateau. Into the sunlight.
There are scouts out there, he said, watching for gem hearts.
Come out anyway. Stop hiding, Kaladin. Be.
Lopin and Rock whooped below in excitement. Kaladin stared outward at the blue sky.
I have to know, he whispered.
No?
You ask me why I protect Dalinar. I have to know if he really is what he seems, Syl. I have to know if one of them lives up to his reputation. That will tell me...
Tell you?
She asked, becoming the image of a full-size young woman standing on the wall before him. She was nearly as tall as he was, her dress fading to mist.
Tell you what?
If honor is dead, Kaladin whispered.
He is.
Syl said.
But he lives on in men. And in me.
Kaladin frowned.
Dalinar Kholin is a good man, Syl said.
He is friends with Amaram. He could be the same inside.
You don't believe that.
I have to know, Syl, he said, stepping forward.
He tried to take her arm as he would a human's, but she was too insubstantial. His hand passed through.
I can't just believe it. I need to know. You asked what I want. Well, that's it. I want to know if I can trust Dalinar. And if I can...
He nodded toward the light of the day outside the chasm.
If I can, I'll tell them what I can do. I will believe that at least one Light Eyes won't try to take everything from me. Like Rishon did. Like Amaram did. Like Sadeus did.
And that is what it will take? She asked.
I warned you that I was broken, Syl.
No. You've been reforged. It can happen to men.
To other men, yes, Kaladin said, raising his hand, feeling the scars on his forehead. Why had the stormlight never healed those? I'm not certain about myself yet. But I will protect Dalinar Kholin with everything I have. I will learn who he is.
who he really is. Then maybe we'll give him his Knight's Radiant.
And Amaram? What of him?
Pain. Tien. Him I'm going to kill.
Kaladin,
she said, hands clasped before her.
Don't let this destroy you.
It can't, he said, stormlight running out. His uniform coat began to fall backward toward the ground, as did his hair. Amaram already took care of that. The ground below fully reasserted itself, and Kaladin fell backward away from her. He sucked in stormlight, twisting in the air as his veins flared back to life. He landed feet first in a rush of power and light. The other three remained silent for a few moments as he stood up straight.
That, Brock said, was very fast way to get down.
Ha! But it did not include falling on face, which would be fun. So you get only soft clap.
He proceeded to clap. It was indeed soft. Lopin, however, cheered, and Sigzil nodded with a wide grin. Kaladin snorted, grabbing a water skin. The king's railing was cut with a shard blade, Sigzil. He took a drink. And no, it wasn't the assassin in white. That attempt on Elokar's life was too crude. Sigzil nodded. What's more, Kaladin said, the railing must have been cut after the high storm that night. Otherwise the wind would have blown the railing out of shape. So our saboteur, a shard-bearer, somehow got out onto the balcony after the storm. Lopin shook his head, catching the waterskin as Kaladin threw it back.
We're supposed to believe that one of the camp shard-bearers snuck through the palace and got onto that balcony gone, and nobody noticed him?
Could someone else do this thing?
Rock said, gesturing to the wall.
Walk up it?
I doubt it, Kaladin said.
A rope, Sigzil said.
They looked to him.
If I wanted to sneak a shardbearer in, I'd bribe some servant to let down a rope.
Sigzil shrugged.
One could be smuggled out onto the railing easily, perhaps wrapped around the servant's body under their clothing. The saboteur and maybe some friends could climb up the rope, cut the railing and dig at the mortar, then climb back down. The accomplice then cuts the rope and goes back inside.
Kaladin nodded slowly.
So, Rock said, we find out who went on balcony after storm, and we find accomplice. Easy. Ah! Maybe you are not airsick, Sigzil. No. Probably just a little.
Kaladin felt unsettled. Moash had been out on that balcony between the storm and the king's near fall.
I'll ask around, Sigzil said, rising.
No, Kaladin said quickly. I'll do it. Don't speak a word of this to anyone else. I want to see what I can find.
All right, Sigzil said.
He nodded toward the wall.
Can you do that again?
More tests? Kaladin asked with a sigh.
We have time, Sigzil said. Besides, I believe Rock wants to see if you fall on your face.
Ah!
All right, Kaladin said. But I'm going to have to drain some of those spheres we're using for light. He glanced toward them sitting in little piles on the too clean ground. By the way, why did you clear away the rubble in this area?
Clear it away?
Sigzil asked.
Yeah, Kaladin said. There was no need to go moving remains around, even if they are just skeletons.
He trailed off as Sigzil picked up a sphere and held it up toward the wall, exposing something Kaladin had missed before. Deep gouges where the moss had been scraped off, the rock scored. Chasm fiend. One of the massive great shells had passed through the area, and its bulk had scraped everything away.
I didn't think they came this close to the war camps, Kaladin said. Maybe we shouldn't train the lads down here for a while just in case.
The others nodded.
He's gone now, Rock said. Otherwise, we'd have been eaten. It's obvious. So, back to training.
Kaladin nodded, though those gouges haunted him as he practiced. A few hours later, they led a tired group of former bridgemen back into their barrack block.
Exhausted as they looked, the men of Bridge 17 seemed more lively than they'd been before going down into the chasm. They perked up even more when they reached their barrack and found one of Rock's apprentice chefs fixing them a big pot of stew. It was dark by the time Kaladin and Teft got back to Bridge 4's own barrack. Another of Rock's apprentices was fixing the stew here, Rock himself, having gotten back a little earlier than Kaladin, tasting and giving criticism. Shen moved behind Rock, stacking bowls. Something was wrong. Kaladin stopped just outside the light of the fire pit, and Teft froze beside him.
"Something is off," Teft said.
"Yeah," Kaladin agreed, scanning the men. They were clumped together on one side of the fire, some seated, others standing in a group. Their laughter forced, their postures nervous. When you trained men for war, they started to use combat stances whenever they were uncomfortable. Something on the other side of the fire was a threat. Kaladin stepped into the light and found a man sitting there in a nice uniform, hands down at his side, head bowed. Renarin Kolin. Oddly, he was rocking back and forth with a small motion, staring at the ground. Kaladin relaxed.
"Bright Lord," Kaladin said, stepping over to him.
"Is there something you need?"
Renarin scrambled to his feet and saluted.
"I would like to serve under your command, sir."
Inside, Kaladin groaned.
"Let's talk away from the fire, Bright Lord."
He took the spindly prince by the arm, leading him away from the ears of the others.
"Sir,"
Renarin said, speaking softly,
"I want—"
"You shouldn't call me sir," Kaladin whispered. "You're light-eyed. Storms, you're the son of the most powerful man in Eastern Roshar."
"I want to be in Bridge 4,"
Renarin said. Kaladin rubbed his forehead.
During his time as a slave, dealing with much larger problems, he had forgotten about the headaches of dealing with high-born light-eyes. Once, he might have assumed he'd heard the most outlandish of their ridiculous demands. Not so, it seemed. "You can't be in Bridge 4. We're bodyguards for your own family. What are you going to do, guard yourself?"
"I won't be a liability, sir. I'll work hard."
"I don't doubt you would, Renarin.
Look, why do you want to be in Bridge 4? "My father and my brother,"
Renarin said softly, face shadowed.
"They're warriors. Soldiers. I'm not, if you haven't noticed."
"Yes, something about—"
"Physical ailments," Renarin said. "I've a blood weakness."
"That's a folk description of many different conditions," Kaladin said. "What do you really have?"
"I'm epileptic," Renarin said. "It means—"
"Yes, yes. Is it idiopathic or symptomatic?"
Renarin stood absolutely still in the darkness.
"Was it caused by a specific brain injury?" Kaladin asked. "Or is it something that just started happening for no reason?"
"I've had it since I was a kid."
"How bad are the seizures?"
"They're fine,"
Renarin said quickly.
"It's not as bad as everyone says. It's not like I fall to the ground or froth like everyone thinks. My arm will jerk a few times or I'll twitch uncontrollably for a few moments."
"You retain consciousness?"
"Yeah."
"Myoclonic, probably," Kaladin said. "You've been given bitter leaf to chew?"
Yes. I don't know if it helps. The jerking isn't the whole problem. A lot of times when it's happening, I get really weak, particularly along one side of my body."
"Huh," Kaladin said.
"I suppose that could fit with the seizures.
Have you ever had any persistent relaxation of the muscles? An inability to smile on one side of your face, for example?"
"No. How do you know these things? Aren't you a soldier?"
"I know some field medicine."
"Field medicine? For epilepsy?"
Kaladin coughed into his hand. "Well, I can see why they didn't want you going into battle. I've seen men with wounds that caused similar symptoms, and the surgeons always dismissed those men from duty. It's no shame not to be fit enough for battle, Bright Lord. Not every man is needed for fighting."
"Sure,"
Renarin said bitterly.
"Everyone tells me that. Then they all go back to fighting. The Ardens? They claim every calling is important, but then what do they teach about the afterlife? That it's a big war to reclaim the Tranquiline Hills. That the best soldiers in this life are glorified in the next."
If the afterlife really is a big war, Kaladin said, then I hope I end up in damnation. At least there I might be able to get a wink or two of sleep. Regardless, you're no soldier.
I want to be.
Bright Lord, you don't have to set me to doing anything important, Renarin said. I came to you instead of one of the other battalions because most of your men spend their time patrolling. If I'm patrolling, I won't be in much danger, and my fits won't hurt anyone. But at least I can see, I can feel what it's like.
He rushed on. Kaladin had never heard so many words from the normally quiet young man.
I will obey your commands, Renarin said. Treat me like a new recruit. When I'm here, I'm not a prince's son. I'm not a Light Eyes. I'm just another soldier. Please, I want to be a part of it. When Adolin was young, my father made him serve in a spearman squad for 2 months.
He did? Kaladin asked, genuinely surprised.
Father said every officer should serve in the shoes of his men, Renarin said. I have shards now. I'm going to be in war, but I've never felt what it's like to really be a soldier. I think this is the closest I'll be able to get. Please?
Kaladin folded his arms, looking the youth over. Renarin looked anxious, very anxious. He'd formed his hands to fists, though Kaladin could see no sign of the box Renarin often fiddled with when nervous. He'd begun breathing deeply, but it set his jaw and kept his eyes forward. Coming to see Kaladin, to ask this of him, terrified the young man for some reason. He'd done it anyway. Could one ask anything more of a recruit? Am I really considering this? It seemed ludicrous. And yet one of Kaladin's jobs was to protect Renarin. If he could pound some solid self-defense skills into him, that would go a long way toward helping him survive assassination attempts.
I should probably point out, Renarin said, how much easier it will be to guard me if I'm spending time training with your men. Your resources are thin, sir. Having one fewer person to protect must be appealing. The only times I'll leave are the days when I practice my shards under Swordmaster Zile.
Kaladin sighed. You really want to be a soldier?
Yes, sir.
Go take those dirty stew bowls and wash them, Kaladin said, pointing. Then help Rock clean his cauldron and put away the cooking implements.
Yes, sir,
Renarin said, with an enthusiasm Kaladin had never heard from anyone assigned washing duty. Renarin jogged over and began happily snatching up bowls. Kaladin folded his arms and leaned against the barrack. The men didn't know how to react to Renarin. They'd hand over bowls of half-finished stew to please him, and conversation hushed when he was too near. But they'd been nervous around Shen, too, before eventually coming to accept him. Could they ever do the same for a Light Eyes? Moesh had refused to hand his bowl to Renarin, washing it himself, as was their common practice. Once done, he strolled over to Kaladin.
You're really going to let him join?
I'll speak to his father tomorrow, Kaladin said. Get the High Prince's read on it.
I don't like it. Bridge 4, our nightly conversations. These things are supposed to be safe from them, you know?
Yeah, Kaladin said. But he's a good kid. I think if any Light Eyes could fit in here, he could.
Moesh turned, raising an eyebrow toward him.
You disagree, I presume? Kaladin asked.
He doesn't act right, Cal. The way he talks, the way he looks at people. He's strange.
That's not important, though. He's light-eyed, and that should be enough. It means we can't trust him.
We don't need to, Kaladin said. We're just going to keep an eye on him, maybe try to train him to defend himself.
Moesh grunted, nodding. He seemed to accept those as good reasons for letting Renarin stay.
I've got Moesh here, Kaladin thought. Nobody else is close enough to hear. I should ask.
But how did he form the words?
Moesh, were you involved in a plot to kill the king?
Have you thought about what we're going to do? Moesh asked. Regarding Amaram, I mean.
Amaram is my problem.
You're Bridge 4, Moesh said, taking Kaladin by the arm. Your problem is our problem. He's the one who made you a slave.
He did more than that,
Kaladin growled softly, ignoring Syl's gesturing that he should remain quiet.
He killed my friends, Moash, right before my eyes. He's a murderer.
Then something has to be done.
It does.
Kaladin asked,
but what?
You think I should go to the authorities? Moash laughed.
What are they going to do?
You have to get the man into a duel, Kaladin. Bring him down, man against man. Until you do it, something's going to feel wrong to you, deep down in your gut.
You sound like you know what this feels like.
Yeah. Moash gave a little half-smile. I have some Voidbringers in my past, too. Maybe that's why I understand you. Maybe that's why you understand me.
Then what?
I don't really want to talk about it, Moash said.
We're Bridge Four, Kaladin said. Like you said. Your problems are mine.
What did the king do to your family, Moash?
Suppose that's true, Moash said, turning away. I just...
Not tonight. Tonight I just want to relax.
Moash,
Teft called from nearer the fire.
You coming?
I am, Moash called back.
What about you, Lopin? You ready?
Lopin grinned, standing up and stretching beside the fire.
I am Lopin, which means I am ready for anything at any time. You should know this by now.
Nearby, Dre snorted and flipped a chunk of stewed longroot at Lopin. It splattered against the Herdazian's face. Lopin kept right on talking.
As you can see, I was perfectly ready for that, as shown by the poise I display as I make this decidedly rude gesture.
Teft chuckled as he, Pete, and Sigzel walked over to join Lopin. Moash moved to go with them, then hesitated.
You coming, Cal?
Where?
Kaladin asked.
Out,
Moash said, shrugging.
Visit a few taverns, play some rings, get something to drink.
Out. The Bridgemen had rarely done such things in Sadeus's army, at least not as a group, with friends. At first they had been too beaten down to care for anything other than sticking their noses in drink. Later, lack of funds and the general prejudice against them among the troops had worked to keep the Bridgemen to themselves. That wasn't the case any longer. Kaladin found himself stammering.
I probably ought to stay, to go look in at the fires of the other crews.
Come on, Cal, Moash said. You can't always work.
I'll go with you another time.
Fine.
Moash jogged over to join the others. Syl left the fire where she'd been dancing with the Flamespren and zipped over to Kaladin. She hung in the air, watching the group walk off into the evening.
Why didn't you go?
She asked him.
I can't live that life anymore, Syl, Kaladin said. I wouldn't know what to do with myself.
But...
Kaladin walked away and got himself a bowl of stew.